In this episode, we're going to be talking about what happened with Draymond Green's indefinite suspension, just what's going on with the league's stars right now, the MVP update, and more. So let's just jump right into it.
All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your hosts, Raphael Singer
and Hunter Leon.
And a lot has happened in the NBA since the last episode. A lot of history being made, a lot of unprecedented things that we've never really seen before. And I guess we should start this episode by talking about maybe the most notable piece of news in this past week, and that's Draymond Green, who was issued an indefinite suspension by the NBA due to his conduct, his rather violent conduct towards players repeatedly throughout the season. Obviously, he had that very infamous incident where he stepped on Domantas Sabonis in a game against the Phoenix Suns. He delivered, I guess, what can only be called a like roundhouse punch almost to Yusuf Nurkic.
A haymaker.
Yeah, seriously, something straight out of a boxing match. So the league offered or issued him an indefinite suspension, and he's essentially going to be going through a 3-week counseling period followed by a check-in with the NBA. So before jumping into like what this means for the Warriors and in terms of basketball, like, what were your thoughts on Draymond Green's conduct? Do you think this is a fair punishment? Do you think this went too far? What are your overall thoughts on this controversy?
Look, if these were isolated incidents, you could say, hey, wait, this is way too far. Our players have done this sort of thing. But it's repeated. And I think what makes this worse than his typical outbursts is, I mean, we all obviously remember the chokehold he had against Rudy Gobert, like, just a few games ago, where it was just, like, out of nowhere. Like, to start the game, essentially. And he was suspended for 5 games. That I thought at first I was like, man, that's a long suspension. Like, I think that might be a little unnecessary. We've seen Ben Simmons do this in the past to Karl-Anthony Towns. He didn't even get a suspension. But a few games later, he comes back and he throws a haymaker, like you said, into Yusuf Nurkic. And as soon as that happened, I realized that maybe the 5 games wasn't enough. And he doesn't understand how bad his conduct is, especially with the reputation the NBA is trying to uphold today. Like, there's a very stark difference in the way the NBA wants to present themselves as an organization, as a league. And they want to come off as a less aggressive, less, not less physical, but they want to come off as more of a good and, like, family-friendly organization. And Draymond Green has not reflected that. And outside of that, I mean, he's putting other players at risk and at jeopardy. Even Stephen Clay and Steve Kerr could not defend this man. So I think this is very warranted. And I think if he needs more than 3 weeks to be away from the team, he should be away for more than 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that this is not an isolated incident. We've seen this repeatedly, not only this year, but in the past. I mean, everybody sort of remembers, you know, the infamous Draymond kicking Steven Adams in the nuts and just so many other incidents of him just being violent and unnecessarily physical. And that's just not acceptable in the NBA. I mean, it is a sport. But, you know, like, you can't just go assaulting people, right? Like, that's very much against, like, the league conduct and just, like, general decency as an athlete. And so I think this is definitely a valid suspension. I don't know how if this 3-week period is going to be enough, but I guess we'll have to wait and see about that. But moving on to more basketball matters, I mean, we've already seen the Warriors struggling a lot this year, right? Not only dealing with Draymond's antics in the past, which is led to some inconsistencies in the roster, but, you know, Klay Thompson's regression and just some questionable rotations from Steve Kerr. I mean, Hunter, do you think that this sort of solidifies the Warriors, I guess, being underwhelming this year and maybe not being real contenders? Or do you
I mean, I will say Klay Thompson has sort of returned. He's not like who he used to be, but he's been having better games, some 20-point games, some good shooting nights. So, I mean, Klay's kind of returned to the mean. Like, I think we were hating on him a little too hard before, but obviously he's never going to be that player that he was pre-injury. This team with Draymond is, I believe, their record is 3 games above 500, and without Draymond, their record is 4 or 5 games below 500. Draymond is a significant piece to this team. He, you know, helps Steph Curry get open looks. He is the engine for this team, and without him, you can see the impact. Chris Paul is a great player, but he can't make up for what Draymond does. The lack of defense, they're already a super small team, but without Draymond, they have no size and no defensive ability. It's very clear. I feel bad for Steph more than anyone else because he's clearly still got it, and he just doesn't have anyone around him to support him. You know, we have to look at Draymond's contract and say, look, Draymond's on contract 4 more years, $25 million a year. That's a lot, man, especially for a guy who's regressing as a player and causing so much issues, and you trade away a young star in return.
Well, one thing I'll say about that is, honestly, Draymond hasn't even been regressing as a player. He's having a great year if you just look at the numbers. I mean, I want to say career highs and shooting splits and just honestly being very efficient all around the board. It's just these, you know, these violent outbursts that are really detracting right from his level of play. If you're the Warriors here, do you even consider, I mean, you have to be considering potentially moving Draymond and retooling this roster, right? Because clearly it hasn't been working, and Draymond might be too much trouble for what it's worth. Is that a conversation you think that the Warriors front office is having?
I mean, I think you have to have the conversation, but I think they're taking it very lightly. I don't think it's something that they're thinking about too seriously yet, especially because we know the success that Draymond brings to this team. And it would be really hard to move him. You're not going to get the value out of Draymond as an individual for what he gives your team, right? Because what makes Draymond so valuable is part of his connection to Steph Curry. And that connection is not as nearly as valuable to other teams. Yes, he's a good defender. Yes, he's a good passer. But that style of play is it's kind of hard to just put that onto any other NBA team and make it work. It's very unique to the Warriors.
That's true, but I mean, I could see him having immediate success on a team like Dallas, right? Like, imagine him and Luka Doncic, who would bring some much needed defense and physicality to that team, and a bit of toughness, a bit of grit to a team that might be lacking that. So if I'm the Warriors, I'm certainly inquiring into his value and seeing what teams are interested, because it just hasn't been working this year. And you got us, it's hard to be optimistic if you're the Warriors front office about this season and your chances at the title, right? Just too many negatives. And I think that Draymond Green might be the piece that ends up being moved, but we'll see what happens when he ends up coming back. You have any final comments on this, or we get to
move? No, I just wanted to ask you, what do you think, or how do you think this impacts Draymond's legacy as a player, as an individual? Do you think this kind of gives him a Dennis Rodman type reputation?
I would say more so of like a Ron Artest, right? A guy who, you know, extremely talented player, one of an all-time great defender, a champion, but, you know, with a lot of with that physicality, with that defensive grit, sometimes going too far and being like outwardly violent towards other players. I think that is sort of how we're going to view him. But I mean, there's no taking away from the guy, right? He's Defensive Player of the Year, 4-time NBA champ, multiple-time All-Star, right? Like, one of the all-time greats, at least on the defensive side of the ball. I think that this is just going to sort of – he already had a bit of a checkered past with all these violent outbursts and all of that. But I don't think this is going to impact his legacy too much. Because I do think that this might be the sort of wake-up call he needs, that he does need to change his ways, and that, you know, this kind of conduct is not going to fly anymore, and that the league has really taken notice of that. So
– right.
I mean, maybe we'll see him change his name, Draymond World Peace. That could be in the cards. But yeah, I think we should be good to move on. We'll see how this ends up playing out. But speaking of, I guess, trouble in the NBA, a lot of the league stars, especially this season, have sort of been in a lot of controversy, especially a lot of the young stars that were supposed to be the sort of face of the league, right? We had Ja Morant with that 25-game suspension. He will be coming back tonight, which is going to be interesting to see, and very, very much needed if you're the Memphis Grizzlies, who have been having a really tough start to the season. Right. We had Zion Williamson, who was embroiled in that whole Mariah Mills controversy. And just recently, we have Anthony Edwards, who got embroiled in another sort of controversy with his significant other. I guess that's the most charitable way to put it. So, I mean, do you think this sort of controversy, this off the court drama, is unique to this generation in the era of social media and Instagram models and all these sorts of phenomenon that are pretty unique to this generation? Or do you think that past generations have also sort of had these kinds of troubles and we're just seeing the latest iteration?
Look, I think the difference is now these sorts of issues that these players are having are being exposed, right? In the age of social media, like for example, we wouldn't have known about the Draymond Green, Jordan Poole fist altercation if not for social media. We would maybe know about, well, obviously we'd know about Ja Morant's suspension because that that's different. What's happening, between their families or, whatever, if it's not a family, whatever it is. I don't think this is unique to this generation. I think there's always good and bad apples in each generation, and I think certain players have a harder time than others. Like, you can look, no matter how you feel about these players, like back two generations ago, you had, Allen Iverson was very sort of thug gangster. Like, that was his sort of reputation. I mean, Kobe Bryant had issues at some point in his career. Jason Kidd had domestic abuse issues. So, you have guys in every generation, but at the same time, you also have guys like in this generation, Luka Doncic is a good role model. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Tyrese Maxey. There's a lot of good young talent who also, reflects a positive leadership. LeBron James in the past generation, Kevin Durant. There's still a lot of stars who have shown how to be respectful. And I think it's just, individuals as fans can decide who they look up to.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think this is really unique to this generation. Just the fact that it's sort of publicized a lot more and this information gets out. A lot of these stories, even if they were to get out, the league, I feel like in the past, probably had a pretty tight chokehold on the information that gets released to the public. And if, a story like that comes out, like they'll do their best to sort of cover it up and make sure it doesn't really get out. Because a lot of the league's value comes from the stars being like, role models and having a good reputation. So I'm sure the league in the past, and even now probably, does their best to sort of cover up any sort of stories that might be harmful towards their guy's reputation. But yeah, I think that social media has just sort of made these things a lot more publicized.
Right.
I think that yeah, like we also got to focus on, as you said, the positive guys that really have been free of controversy. I mean, I think the most striking example is a guy like LeBron, right? Like coming from a single parent household, marrying his basically high school sweetheart, and basically staying controversy free for 21 years, like such a long career, and just being completely free of controversy is incredible. And I think we don't give him enough credit for that. Because I one thing I'll say about these young guys is like it's easy to criticize them. It's easy to say we wouldn't do the same in their position. But when you're that young and you get $100 million contracts, with all the attention, all the fame, and everybody is clamoring to be with you. It's easy to make mistakes.
And no history of good financial decisions or family having managed finances.
Exactly. And so, I mean, we do have to sort of cut them some slack and be a little bit sympathetic to these guys, and just hope that they can learn from these experiences and grow as people. I mean, we're all like, let he without sin cast the first stone, right? Like we've all sort of made mistakes in the past. And so I think that, we just got to cut these guys some slack and just sort of be understanding when these guys get into trouble. So.
Right. Well, in certain circumstances, I do not give Ja Morant slack for brandishing a gun on a 17-year-old. But
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, definitely in certain respects. I mean, like also I think, talking about past generations, a guy like Karl Malone did like some abhorrent things in the past, and yet the
Gilbert
league,
Arenas.
yeah, Gilbert Arenas. I mean, I don't know if I would put those two in the same sort
No,
of,
not the
but
same level, but
like you like the
yeah.
NBA touts Karl Malone as like an all-timer, Hall of Famer, a legend, but like they haven't blackballed him from the league despite like it pretty much being confirmed that he did some like absolutely reprehensible things in the past. So I think that from a league standpoint, there's a little bit of hypocrisy there, but as more of a fan, you just got to sort of be understanding for some of these things and realize that there's definitely levels to it. Like Jaws was not as bad as like Zion's, which is probably not as bad as Ant's. Like, you just got to be put these in put these things into perspective, I guess is the way I would put
Right.
it.
Yeah, but I think we can move on from there to talking about some more interesting positive news. And I wanted to talk about the NBA MVP race, right? If we had to give out the MVP today, who would be your top five candidates in voting? Give me five through one.
Oh, 5-1 is tough, but and unfortunately, I think that this is not who I would want to win MVP, but just based off everything, taking team standing into account, taking in, just performances all across the board, I think I would have to give the MVP at this current moment to Joel Embiid for him to win his back-to-back MVP. I think that, he's having a historic excuse me. He's having a historic scoring season. I think the first player since Wilt to have more points than minutes per game, which is pretty insane. He's, been the driving force behind the Sixers having an 18-8 record, third in the East. Just a historic scoring season, and also, being dominant on the defensive side of the ball. So I have to give Embiid credit, despite me
Right.
personally not being the biggest fan of his style of play. The exaggerated sort of, some could call it flopping, to get to the line, and just his, like, I guess, ability to get to the free throw line and score at the charity stripe. But some other guys I would want to mention is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The Thunder are sitting at number two over there in the West, and he's been having a terrific season, scoring 30 plus, having a great defensive season too. I mentioned last episode, he actually leads the league in steals, which is pretty insane for a guy not really known for his defensive ability. And he's been doing phenomenal things in Oklahoma. So, and I guess maybe the last guy I would want to mention as maybe a sort of dark horse is Luka Doncic. I mean, we don't give him enough credit for the season that he's having. He's putting up some absolutely insane numbers, even with Kyrie Irving being out. So, I mean, he's putting up 33, 8, and 9 on pretty damn good efficiency. And over the past, like, few games where Kyrie's been out, he's been going absolutely bonkers, all across the board. So those are three guys I want to throw out. Who would you want to win the MVP as of right now, or who do you think should win the MVP? And I guess, is there any guys that I didn't mention?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to agree with you on Joel Embiid being the number one, having, all the uncertainty in this offseason, them being where they are, high scoring, all everything you said. I think James, although I would have not want him to win it last year, I don't think he should have as many MVPs as Giannis or Jokic, but he does deserve this one, and that's no doubt. We can talk about his MVP from last year, maybe saying that goes to Jokic, but whatever. He deserved this year's so far. I think Jason Tatum, you have to talk about him being in the race. Their team is at 20-5 on the year. Great efficiency. I think it's all-time efficiency for him. He's leading this team. If you look in the Western Conference, you have to talk about the Timberwolves. We were just talking about Anthony Edwards with his controversy, but he's been a great player. They're leading the league. Best defensive team. He's really stepped it up, having sort of Michael Jordan-esque numbers with that, 35-5. Great efficiency for him. He's really stepped it up. So, I think all those guys you mentioned have to be in there, like Luka and Shai. But I also want to give out a shout out to Jason Tatum and to Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I think those are fair. It's kind of funny. Jason Tatum, I feel like he's perpetually in MVP talks, and he never seems to be like a real contender for that award. Just because I feel that the Boston Celtics, sorry, my voice is
Your voice is slowly deteriorating, Rafa.
right.
You good? No, if you need to grab a sip of water, I can take
I'm gonna
over.
grab some water. You talk about the Jazz.
Well, while Rafa is dealing with his minor throat issue, not great for podcasting, but the Jazz are looking to trade some guys. Lauri Markkanen was a guy they talked about as being untouchable last year, but he's now available on the market. Perfect complementary star, really easy to plug in. He's got length, he's got the ability to defend a little bit, great shooting, very efficient. He's one of the most efficient off-ball players in the league. And I believe the asking price for him right now is roughly similar to Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, which is kind of crazy. But that's what Sam Presti is asking. And Jordan Clarkson supposedly also available on the market. Great sixth man, 25-ish point per game score when you need him to be. And he's just a walking bucket. So who do you think should be calling these guys to get these guys?
Well, I think you sort of described their games perfectly. I think if you're Sam Presti, for the OKC Thunder, you need to be calling as much as you can to inquire about Lauri Markkanen. I think he would fit perfectly, both in terms of timeline and in terms of fit with OKC. Just imagine him alongside Chet, SGA, Jalen Williams, Lu Dort. I think that would sort of be the missing piece that OKC really needs to be a real contender. I think that for Jordan Clarkson, basically any number of teams that need a sort of flamethrower off the bench should be looking into his asking price. I think that, a team like Phoenix could use a guy like Jordan Clarkson to come off the bench. Maybe even a team like LA, the Clippers, I mean, could use him to sort of shore up their bench depth. Whether they have the pieces for that, I don't think so. But basically, any team that needs some bench scoring could use Jordan Clarkson's talents. It's just a matter of whether you're willing to give up like a first round pick or two for a guy like Jordan Clarkson, which I don't know if many teams are.
If the asking price right now on Lauri Markkanen is roughly five firsts in value, Jordan Clarkson probably asking is two, which is still insane because five first round picks for Lauri Markkanen is ridiculous. And I think they're on riding that high a little bit from getting that Rudy Gobert trade done, where they got an insane haul. Obviously, it's working out for the Timberwolves right now, but I don't know that there's any team in the league willing to give up that many picks, except maybe OKC. Just because they have so many picks and they cannot use them all.
I just like for OKC, I can't stress this enough. If you get Lauri Markkanen, I think you are a legit contender and like honestly top three favorites for winning the championship this year. I can't stress that enough. Like Lauri Markkanen is the missing piece in this team. He's gonna help with the shooting. He's just gonna fit their sort of free-flowing offense. And I think the chemistry would be immediate between him and SGA. And they have the assets to do it, right? They have the picks to make this deal happen. So it just seems like a match made in heaven. The Jordan Clarkson one, I could see him being moved. I could also see him staying if the Jazz don't like what they're getting, but I think Lauri Markkanen should be out of here come February. And OKC should be in good shape about that.
Right. No, I fully agree. I think it's interesting looking at where the Jazz were last year with Laurie and Colin Sexton. They were all playing really well. And this year they're definitely not nearly as high as they were last year. I think they're just ready to have a full on redo reset on the year.
I
I think
think,
they're definitely. Oh, go ahead.
sorry, I just want to mention about Utah. Like, I think this is actually a wise move. I think they see like even if they wanted to go kind of all in with this, maybe they send THT and Sexton to get like a second guy for Lauri. Like, Lauri's not the type of guy to be your number one guy on a championship team. And
Right.
I think the Jazz realize that, and they're more retooling for the future and sort of building for the long term. And are saying we're gonna wait for a guy in the draft that we can get that could be our sort of franchise cornerstone, and we're not gonna sort of settle for mediocrity. We want to be real contenders, and we realize that this team, as it's currently constructed, is never gonna get there. So I think this is a wise move from the Jazz, and I'm excited to see where these guys end up going.
Yeah, I think another team, by the way, that could be really great with Laurie on it is the Pelicans. I think you want a really big lineup with Brandon Ingram at the two, Zion at the three, Laurie at the four. You can still have Valanciunas in there with CJ at the one. And you don't have quite as much playmaking, but you have so much size and shooting ability on that team and strength that I think that they could actually be a real threat, especially with all the questions right now around the Pelicans and their health. They're a good team, and I think just adding a piece like that to have some consistency would be really good for them.
Yeah, no, actually, I like that fit too, and I
I
think
think
that,
they have the pieces too.
yeah, I mean, they do have a lot of young guys they could send over. I could see like I know they love him, but like Herb Jones, if they wanted to sort of part ways and get a guy like Lauri Markkanen, I could see the Jazz really liking his defensive tenacity and being like, yeah, we'll make that deal work if you throw in like a pick or two, we'll cut you like give you a better deal on that, but
I think that the supersize lineups, there's not many of them left in the NBA, and we've seen how effective they can be. I mean, just off the top of my head, like 2020 Lakers, that supersize kind of lineup, not a lot of teams can really do
Right.
anything about that. They can
Well,
just sort of.
even this year, you look at the team like the Orlando Magic, they have a ton of size at every position, and that's part of the reason they're so good this year.
That's true. Yeah, when you got Paolo, Franz Wagner, just all those big guys, those long wings that can really help you and sort of be versatile at every position.
Even like Jalen Suggs, Anthony Black, Jonathan Isaac, like literally everyone on this team is big.
Yeah. And so I think that it's a you can't like size is just so important, and I think Lauri Markkanen is as a four, potentially a three that can spread the floor and just knock down the three ball at a very high clip. He's a very valuable commodity that I think a lot of teams are going to be inquiring into.
Right. So I think the moral of the story here is size matters.
Yeah, and in this context it definitely does.
Right.
But moving on, let's talk about a team that I guess we've sort of haven't been talking about, but they've quietly been making a sort of resurgence, and that's the LA Clippers. They've won eight straight. Kawhi has not missed a game this season. And Kawhi, Paul George, Harden, and Russ all seem to be having their most efficient seasons ever. And Harden has really sort of figured it out on this team. He had a 24-point explosion in the fourth quarter against the Pacers, including some very vintage step backs, some 2018 throwbacks. And the Clippers just seem to be gelling and really steamrolling a lot of opponents. So what are your thoughts on this Clippers run? And do you think this is going to translate to playoff success?
Right. I think we talked about this, when they were in their slump, losing five games in a row as soon as James Harden got there. We were not too worried about it. We knew this was going to take some time to gel. Russ having come off the bench was a great decision for himself and for this team. And they're firing on all cylinders. It's so strange. Every 5 years, Kawhi Leonard goes berserk, doesn't miss a game, destroys his body, wins a championship, and then is out for the remainder of the next 5 years. And it just seemed this is his fifth year. It's been 5 years since Toronto, and 5 years before that, it was his 2014 run with the Spurs. Maybe it's the Clippers' time. Maybe finally they'll get
Okay.
over the hump. It's the
Good point.
Kawhi magic every 5 years. We'll see. He's been great. I really do like this team. They just complement each other really well. They're so deep. They've been making it work. I don't think there's really too much to talk about since we've already talked about this team so much. And I think we both weren't like ecstatic about this team. We didn't understand why they made that James Harden move at first, but we both weren't worried about it.
I mean, I want to say I feel very vindicated right now at the sort of low of this team when everyone was counting out Harden, everyone was sort of bashing this team. I said, look, they're going to figure it out this year, and Harden is going to look really good at certain points throughout the season. He's going to have some vintage games. He's going to have some 40-point nights. And I've been proven right in that respect. But what I also did say is I think this team is going to collapse in the playoffs, and I still stand by that. I think that, you have James Harden and Russell Westbrook, guys who notoriously sort of fumble it in the playoffs, and
Paul
also
George has sometimes. He's 50-50 too.
yeah. And I mean Kawhi, I mean if we want to talk about Kawhi, like one thing I'll say is I think that his reputation is a little bit artificially boosted. Yes, he had an all-time great playoff run in 2019, and he was a major piece in that 2014 Spurs team. But I think that 2019 like run in Toronto has really artificially boosted his reputation in the playoffs. Because if you think about it, what has he done since then? He has not done a single notable thing in the playoffs. I mean, he's had some great games here and there, but hasn't been able to piece them together to make a serious deep run. Even in I think it was 2021 when the Clippers made the Western Conference Finals, that was with him being injured. That was a lot of Paul George
Right.
putting the team on his back. So I think that, there's just too many liabilities on this team. They're an old team, and the health is also a big concern. So I'm still not fully bought in on the Clippers. I don't think I ever will be, as this roster is currently constructed. And I think that, if anything has been taught to us over the past few years, it's that you can't treat James Harden's regular seasons as being indicative of what he's going to do in the playoffs, because it never translates the same. So good to see the Clippers winning, and that this team is like having fun and winning games, but I don't think this is really telling us anything about how the playoffs are going to go.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily disagree. I think this team has an opportunity though. And they play a lot. The only issue is, to me, that I see is they're still 22nd in the league in assists. They play a lot of ISO ball. Obviously, that comes with being having James Harden, although he's a great passer. They were passing the ball a ton when Russell Westbrook was on this team without James Harden. And I think they were top 10 in the league in assists. And I think that matters a ton when you get to playoff basketball is being able to pass the ball, getting the open shots, because playoff basketball, you're going to only have tough looks most of the time if you're playing ISO. But if you're passing the ball, making the defense make tough decisions, you can get some good shots off. And like you're saying, maybe this team doesn't have as much of an ability to do that as they did without James Harden. Only time will tell what happens. But I think that is a take that's going to age pretty well.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I'm honestly these days my takes have been a little worse for wear. I haven't had a lot of good ones in a while, so I need this one to sort of pan out to re save my reputation before
Yeah,
I get
well,
traded abroad.
talking about another team with a lot of health issues, let's talk about, the Suns, because Bradley Beal is out for another multiple weeks after suffering a right ankle injury, in a jump shot, twisted his ankle. And after that, being out for pretty much the entire season with a back injury. Now Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal have only played one real game together, and they lost that game to I believe it was the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
And they played 5 minutes together in another game, but that doesn't really count. We've talked about our worries with this team. The fact that it looks very similar to the James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Brooklyn team, where they just never played together. Are we going to continue to have these same concerns? And do you think this team could ever work?
I mean, no. I think that like we are gonna still have, or sorry, maybe I meant to say yes. I still think that we have these same concerns. Because this is just history repeating itself. I mean, we've, as you mentioned, the big three have only played one game together. Devin Booker has missed some substantial time. Bradley Beal has barely played at all this season. Kevin Durant's been the healthiest guy this year, which is like very telling.
And he was out for a few games recently.
Yeah, and I just think that, you need, especially when you have like a three-star lineup, right? First of all, you need time in the regular season to gel, to figure out the chemistry, to figure out how this is going to work, because there is only one ball. And when you have three very ball dominant stars, as you do in Phoenix, it takes the regular season and a good number of games to figure out how you're going to make that work. And so, how what this season is shaping up to be is like, maybe 20 games left in the season, Bradley Beal, Booker, and KD are all healthy and they try start to figure it out. But that's just not enough time come playoff time. And I think we're going to see a similar situation to what we saw in Brooklyn with this team flaming out early, right? I mean, the bench on this team has been okay, but it's not going to carry you in a playoff series. You're banking on your three stars really piecing it all together. And that's assuming that they are going to get healthy. I mean, it's not like these guys are necessarily the youngest players in the league. I mean, Booker has some youth on him, but KD and Beal, they're kind of veteran guys, KD's had big injuries in the past. Bradley Beal as well sort of missed time here and there. So there are no guarantees with this team. And I think that's the big sort of gamble you're taking when you bet on these big star lineups. And so I am not big on the Suns either, like the Clippers. I don't think they're really going to make it too far this year. And I think this regular season has been very discouraging if you're a Suns fan.
Yeah, I mean, look at where the Suns are in the standings. I believe they're on the outside looking in. I think they're at my apologies. They're at the 10th seed. They're 7 games back right now of the first seed. And it's a pretty tight race between the 10th seed and the 4th seed. But when you're talking about a team that has so many injuries, we have to be concerned.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the concern is very real. Because like I was saying, you just don't know with this team, right? You just
This
don't know.
team.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say there's just so many question marks and it's a
Here
lot of
comes
like if,
Detroit
buts,
Houston
and
yet again, and they're going to be
maybes.
without Bradley Beal for a
Sorry, I
while.
think you might have something playing.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. I didn't know where the audio was coming from. But what I was going to say
Yeah.
is they almost lost to the Washington Wizards
Oh my
with
God.
Kevin Durant and Devin Booker both playing. So, this is a team that could be in some trouble,
That's
but
I
I
love how
think.
that's like the ultimate indicator this year, the ultimate barometer for if a team's in trouble is if you lose to one of like the cursed three teams. If you lose to the Wizards, Pistons, or Spurs,
Spurs, which we
it's
did,
not
Rafa.
looking.
The Lakers lost to the Spurs.
I
No.
know. I know it's not looking good for us either, bro. Like it's not looking good, but yeah, I think that's enough Suns talk. We bashed on them enough. And we can move on to talk about another team that has a lot of problems, especially with injuries. That's the Cleveland Cavaliers, because Darius Garland and Evan Mobley are both out for several weeks, with some injuries. There's a lot of question marks surrounding Donovan Mitchell. He's on an expiring contract, and it seems like he doesn't really want to stay in Cleveland. And so, if you're the Cavaliers, you could sort of go in a number of different directions. So, what do you think the Cavs should do, and do you think they're in trouble?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that's sixth seed in the Eastern Conference. Pretty solid. They're deep. They added Max Strus this year. They still have Caris LeVert. Who else? George Niang, they added. He's been pretty good for them. Jarrett Allen's still there. Isaac Okoro. I mean, I like the actual roster construction itself. This is a team that needs to stay healthy. They had a re relatively disappointing end to the season last year. They kind of just fizzled out. Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley just couldn't hang. Donovan Mitchell couldn't do it all himself. And obviously now they're injured, which, for a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who already doesn't really want to be in Cleveland, from what it sounds like, that puts the team in a really tough position. I think they just have to hope. I don't think you can make a move yet. I think it's too early. I think you have to hope your team gets healthy, that Evan Mobley, as a young guy, learned from his mistakes. And leading into this postseason, you can have a better run than you did last year. I think that's really what you have to hope for as this Cavs team, because I either think it's way too early to blow it up, to trade any of these pieces, and I don't really think there is necessarily a market for some of these guys.
I think, okay, look, I disagree with you. I think that, look, if you're the Cavs, you realize, A, Donovan Mitchell's leaving after this year. Like, there's no way that he's staying in Cleveland. And so might as well trade him now while you could still get some value back before he just leaves and you get nothing. And two, I think that you should trade Donovan Mitchell. I think that, look, at the time, it was the right move. But looking at it now, Donovan Mitchell, he's a fantastic player, right? One of the best guards in the league. And a phenomenal scorer. But he has one of the highest usage rates in the league. And he doesn't pass that much. Like, he is kind of a black hole on offense a little bit in the sense that he gets the ball and he's looking to score, but he doesn't get his teammates involved. And so, if you're a guy like Max Strus, who really thrives off, getting in rhythm with shooting the ball, he's had a bit of a rough year in terms of shooting, because of
By the way,
that.
I apologize real quick. I was just going to say, Donovan Mitchell still has 1 year left after this year on contract. It's not an expired this year.
Isn't it a what's called an option though? Isn't it
No,
too?
he's an option the year after that. So he's
Okay.
still on contract until 2025. But still,
Okay.
I don't think that changes their position.
I think though that like, look, especially with Darius Garland, I think that Garland is really the future of this team. I mean, he fits the timeline more with Mobley and even Allen to a certain extent. Whereas Donovan Mitchell is a little bit older. I think that he just doesn't really fit this team and their identity. And so if I'm Cleveland, I'm looking to make a move at the deadline. I think there's a lot of teams that could really use a guy like Donovan Mitchell. And I just think that they last year, look, if they ran it back with just the same roster, I think they would, make it to the second round. I think they would have a good chance of doing that because I think a lot of what went wrong for them last year was just inexperience, right? You had a lot of young guys, first time in the playoffs, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, these guys who explicitly said, like, yeah, the lights were brighter than I expected. The physicality, the toughness of the playoffs was not something I was used to. And what did we see? What did we saw? We saw the Knicks out rebounding a supersized Cavs team, which shouldn't happen. So I think that the Suns would, or sorry, the Cavs would really hone up and improve on those fronts. But I think that this team is still not a contender. And I think that they won't be with Donovan Mitchell sort of stifling the offense and making it very Donovan Mitchell centric instead of getting other guys involved.
This is not a team that's better than the Celtics, Sixers, or Bucks. It's just not. It
Yeah.
might be the fourth best team in the East, but you also have another team, a young team like the Pacers, who is outperforming them.
And look, I might even take like a team like Orlando over the Cavs at this point. yes, they are a younger team and are a little bit more inexperienced in the sense that they haven't made the playoffs with these guys. But I think that I love their defense in Orlando. I love their
And
size.
identity. Identity is
Exactly.
such a big thing.
And I love, like, it's a very selfless culture there in Orlando. You know, guys willing to sacrifice their bodies, willing to sacrifice their own stats to get other guys involved. And I just think that the Cavs, and I'm giving a lot of flack towards Donovan Mitchell, don't get me wrong, he's an incredible player, but I just think that he's in many ways hurting this team more than he's helping by, you know, I guess just making the offense so centric around himself.
Right. I think that's fair, but I think you also have to consider that what other options does he really have? Like, he can move the ball, but I think that this team is, at least right now, especially without Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, is better served with him just having the ball.
Right, but I'm saying this has been the case even when Darius Garland and Evan Mobley were like playing on this team. I'm
Right.
saying this has been a trend throughout the year.
Right. No, I don't disagree. And I imagine you saw that was it switch out video
Yeah.
talking about Donovan Mitchell and his inability to pass and his usage rate. I imagine that's where you got that stuff. And I don't disagree. You look at other guys with usage rates similar to Donovan Mitchell, and you're talking about Tyrese Haliburton, you're talking about Luka Doncic, you're talking about even Kevin Durant. But all of these guys, even Kevin Durant, is averaging more assists than Donovan Mitchell, if that tells you something. So, all those guys are, either double digit, eight assist guys. Kevin Durant's even sitting at like six assists. Donovan Mitchell is the only guy with that high of a usage who's not passing the ball. That
Yeah.
that's telling.
It's troubling, and that kind of play doesn't translate well to the playoffs, especially because, as you were saying, like the ISO ball only takes you so far in the playoffs, but at a certain point you need to rely on those easy looks to get you buckets and the ball movement and the set plays. And the Cavs, as they're currently constructed and as they're currently ran, just don't really have that.
Right.
But I think with that we can move on to talk
Yeah.
about a couple a few notable games that have happened in the past week. And I just want to kind of get your quick thoughts on them. So first, we had Giannis scoring a career high 64 points against the Indiana Pacers, and then some ensuing drama around the game ball. Pretty funny stuff. But
Yep.
what were your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I mean, just an amazing game. That was a not just a career high, but also a high for the franchise. He, outscored Kareem's, I believe, 61 point high scoring game. So that also matters a lot. But just an all around great performance from Giannis. It's nice to see him be able to have that kind of performance with Damian Lillard on the team, which I think we all knew could happen, but it's nice to see him kind of dominate in that way. I believe he got to the line a ridiculous amount of times though, like just unbearable. Like I think he got to the line like 26 times or something stupid.
Unbearable. You mean like it's like he didn't deserve those calls or like.
No, not that he didn't deserve those calls, but it's just not a fun game to watch when somebody shoots 26 free throws in the game.
That's true. But also, I feel like for a guy like Giannis, a guy who's so physically dominant, like he actually does get hacked, unlike
Right.
Embiid. And like, you know, that's the only way that teams can really stop him sometimes is just, you know, fouling him. It's similar to Shaq, you know, like we didn't give Shaq a lot of flack for shooting free throws and scoring most of his paints. Most of his points in the paint, and yet we do the same for Giannis. And so I think that, you know, there's a little bit of hypocrisy there, a little bit of a
Right.
standard, but regardless, I agree. It was a like incredible performance and good on him to do that.
Right.
The
Did
next
you
game,
want to explain the game ball sort of the
yeah,
situation?
so essentially like Giannis scores this 64 point game franchise record career high, and he's looking for the game ball afterwards because obviously he wants to like commemorate this moment with by having the game ball, but allegedly the Pacers took the game ball back to their locker room because a rookie who you know had like kind of an incredible story coming to the NBA scored his first points in the league that night, and so the Pacers took the game ball allegedly to give it to him, and so Giannis was like trying to run into the locker room searching for this game ball, and it was a lot of drama, a lot of like social media disses from the organizations. But as it turns out, neither team actually had the game ball, and it was actually like a referee that took it after the game. So pretty funny story. Just some like harmless drama, pretty entertaining to watch. But moving on, the next game I wanted to mention was Jalen Brunson, who in a game against the Suns had 50 points on 9 for 9 from three. He didn't miss a three-pointer. Pretty incredible stuff. In addition, he had 8 assists and 5 steals. So, I mean, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, that's an incredible stat line. He's the only player, aside from Michael Jordan, to now have scored 50 points with 5+ steals and 5+ assists in a game. So it's a pretty nice company. It was just a great performance. Just shot the absolute lights out. Good for him. We knew this is who Jalen Brunson was. Could you imagine what the Dallas Mavericks could have looked like if they decided to extend him?
Yeah,
Just
I think that's going
couldn't
to be a
imagine.
conversation we're going to have pretty soon about like, wow, the Mavericks might have really fumbled by not trying to do more to keep Jalen Brunson. Because I mean, imagine a team with him, Luka, and Kristaps. Like that's a serious contender, and that's a team that I think could make some real waves in the NBA. And but good on the Knicks for getting him and getting him on such a team friendly contract. His contract, I can't bring this up enough, is like decreasing year after year. He's making less money
Like
year
$20 million.
yeah $20 million. So like for the production you get from him, it's an incredible deal. And so the Knicks are very fortunate to have him.
Yeah, keep
And
in mind that's like the same amount of money that like Isaac Okoro makes. Like that's
yeah,
crazy.
pretty insane stuff. But on the flip side, we talked about two really amazing games. Let's talk about two not so great games, starting with Miles Bridges, who had the second worst plus minus in NBA history the other night, with a minus 56. So anything to say about this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch the Hornets. I just saw the stat line from StatMuse on Twitter, which I thought was hilarious. You know, he's been great for me in fantasy, I will say that. Don't think it's necessarily him. I just think it's the Hornets as an organization, as a roster. They're just not a good team. That I think that just sums up the Hornets, not him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I also didn't watch this game because I wouldn't subject my worst enemies to watching the Charlotte Hornets play basketball. But the next team, or the next player I want to talk about is Steph Curry, who had a single-digit scoring night, and did not score a three-pointer against the in a win actually against the Portland Trailblazers for the first time since 2018.
Yeah, I mean, in 2018, this is what we have to think about. The last time Steph Curry didn't make a three-pointer in the game, Dwight Howard was on the Wizards with John Wall and Bradley Beal. Chris Paul was on the Houston Rockets. Let's think of who else, what else was going on in the league. Paul George was on the Thunder. You know, that's just wild to think about. Like just how long it's been since Steph Curry missed a three-pointer or had no three-pointers in the game.
Yeah, pretty insane stuff. And even crazier that they won that game. I mean, it was against Portland, but still.
Yeah, he played some great defense in that game. He had, I believe, like 4 or 5 steals. Like he still, or maybe it was a few blocks as well. Like he had a good game. Not a good offensive game, but he had a good defensive game, which they need, especially without Draymond.
Yeah, and I want to say another thing that this kind of reminds me of is like the fact that LeBron has scored double digit points in every single game, dating back to like 2007. So you want to talk about like an unbreakable record? That's another one of LeBron's that he has, and I don't see him, letting that up anytime soon.
Yeah, the last time LeBron didn't score double digits, Ime Udoka was like getting drafted to the NBA.
Now he's a whole coach in the league, which is pretty insane to think about. Okay, so the last game I want to talk about is kind of one that was unexpected. Keegan Murray for the Sacramento Kings made a franchise record 12 threes against the Utah Jazz. Steph Curry couldn't believe it when he was told about it, and honestly, it's a little hard for me to believe too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what are your thoughts on this one?
Man, I mean that's close to breaking the record of 14 threes by Klay Thompson. So just, you know, great on him for being able to make that many threes. I think this is a really lethal team when we're talking about Sacramento. I think people kind of forget what they did last year, and they just barely lost to that Warriors squad last year in 7 games, you know, led by an incredible 50-point performance by Steph Curry. And I just think it shows you how deep and dangerous this Sacramento team really is. You know, De'Aaron Fox, DeMontis Sabonis in that same game had a triple double with like, you know, 15 rebounds and 14 assists. Like just a really great stat line from him. So team also has, you know, Harrison Barnes has been great for them. Malik Monk, another great guy. JaVale McGee has honestly been pretty solid for them coming off the bench. Davion Mitchell, this is just such a deep squad. And for Keegan Murray to go off for 12 threes in a game, it just shows how incredible the talent is on this team.
I agree. And I mean, not even to mention De'Aaron Fox, who's having a fantastic season. He's definitely going to
Right.
be, a guy in talks for like a all NBA first team, all NBA team for sure. Maybe first, maybe second, but he's having a career year. And so that's enough of the notable games. I want to give last but not least, I want to give a update from the bottom of the league. As you mentioned, there's like three cursed teams that, if you lose to, it's pretty much a bad omen for teams' chances at winning the title. Those teams are the Detroit Pistons, who are still on a historic losing streak since our last episode. They still have not won a game. I don't
Since
think
October.
they have not won a game since October. They're on a 24 straight losing streak. The all-time record, by the way, is 28 games. So they have chance to make history in that regard. And honestly, I'm kind of rooting for them to make
Yeah,
that record. I think it would be kind of fun.
I'm curious. I'm gonna see what their upcoming schedule is just to know, like if they have the odds of losing.
Yeah, because if
But
they play like the Wizards or the Spurs, which are the other two teams I want to mention, Spurs went on an 18-game losing streak before beating the Lakers, which is unfortunate. And the Wizards are 4-22. So, I mean, just some like all-time bad teams, which is cool to see in the same season. Because usually you have like one team that's like horrifically bad, but for three in the same season, we are really spoiled out here as NBA fans.
yeah.
I will say, like, I think a new form of like torture they could implement would be like watching like a Pistons Wizards series. Like that could be like a new form of like psychological warfare that like governments could wage. So just a thought out there.
Like a loser's
A
playoffs.
loser
Who's the
playoff.
worst team in the NBA? Wait, that's how you get number one pick in the draft. Who is the worst team in the NBA? Losers playoffs.
That's an interesting idea. I just don't know. That might have the lowest viewer. There might be like 10 people watching that.
The losers
And
playoffs is
those 10 people are
crazy.
all the families of the players on the team. But still,
I will say though, it is likely they will break that record because the Detroit Pistons in the next four games will play Utah, Brooklyn twice. Then Boston, then they have to play Houston, then Detroit, or then Toronto. So they have some decently hard competition coming up.
worried about that Brooklyn back to back, because Brooklyn's the type of team that like that second game they like start slipping up and maybe
I'm hoping Brooklyn keeps it up, you know? Let's
want
root for
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
All right, on this week we are but all Brooklyn Nets fans hoping for this to make history. But on that note, I think that's a good place to call it. I think next week we will be seeing the Christmas Day game. So I think we'll recap, how Christmas Day went, and just like all the other news that happened in the NBA since then. With how this season has gone, there'll probably be some pretty big stuff happening, because that just seems to be the sort of trend this year. But thank you all so much for listening. Hope you all have a very happy holidays and a happy new year. It's been another great year of Time Outside. I mean, I don't know why I'm making like the year-end thing, but we'll still have
Yeah,
another
we
episode.
might have one more episode in this before the year ends.
Yeah, definitely. But still, thank you all so much for listening. Your support means a lot. And we'll catch you all next week. So take care.
Peace.